Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, and welcome back to Star Wars Minute. It's the daily podcast where we analyze, scrutinize, but never improvise. The Star Wars movies, 1 minute at a time.
Did you just make that up?
No, I had planned for, made it up in the car. I'm Pete the Retailer from PeteTheRetailer.com.
This is Alex Robinson from AlexRobinson.fun.
I'm Susan Tekla Kruglenska from the ill-named Susan Tekla Kruglenska. I can't even say my name. The ill-named comedy film funnel. Just bad names all around. You guys have a better name, that's for sure.
Well, welcome back. I think comedy film funnel is a fine name.
I still can't stand it. We both hate it, and nothing we can do about it now. But anyway.
Well, that's comedy.
Yeah, I guess. So the other person who hates it is Joe Dader. He does the show with me. He's cartoonist Joe Dader. And this is a loaner from Joe. This is 94, you know.
94.
Yeah, he lent it. He kindly lent it for this occasion.
It's like a trap that we have to say it all the time when it's like, you know, having it up there. It's like we're always like, 94?
Yeah.
Well, we're not at minute 94 yet here in Solo, a Star Wars party. We're at minute 80. Minute 80 starts with Lando asking L3, what did you do? And it ends with Han saying, good to see you, buddy. Good to see you, buddy. Now, I'm going to jump to the end first here.
Okay.
Oh, most unusual.
I'd say Han is maybe only about 80% sure that the Wookiee who just rescued him is Chewbacca.
Oh.
Because
say that again. Say that again.
Terrible.
I'd say he's maybe only 80% sure that the Wookiee who just came to his rescue is Chewbacca. He's just met. He met him like a couple days ago. It's dark. There's a lot of Wookiees around. When he shows up, he's just like, "Oh, hi! Don't forget that guy." Like he doesn't say Chewie anything. He's just like, "Hi! Don't forget that guy." And then he saves him. And then he says, like, "Yeah, good to see you, buddy." Like it totally not committing to being like Chewbacca, and then having this guy be like, "Bruh, bruh, bruh," like this, you know. Because it's, what's Sublak Sagwa or something like that, you know?
That would never have occurred to me. I don't know, but...
He's pretty sure, but I think there's at least 20% doubt in his mind.
It's dark.
That's what I'm saying. It's dark, hard to see.
Better to go with a vague buddy than to, you know, hey, sport?
Yeah, exactly.
There weren't that many Wookiees, though, right? It wasn't like...
More than a few.
Yeah, all right.
That's why I'm saying, you know, there's doubt.
Now, Chewie's performance in this, the way he's destroying people is one of the best Chewie destroying people scenes ever. You know, in this movie, the way he just tosses people around like they're made out of, you know, that they're rag dolls. It's just beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. And the sound there is very good, very satisfying. Clonks when they hit the ground. And, you know, he pile drives. I mean, the way he's just flipping people around, like, you know, they're hitting the ceiling. I mean, it's kind of great. I do like that. I thought that was really well done.
Very chaotic, especially, the one he hits the guy into the ceiling and then he does another guy, he does like a head plant. It's not even like a... Like, you think he's just going to flip him almost like a body slam onto his back, but no, he just drives him into the ground onto his head.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
I wonder if I would have liked the arm pulling off gag if it had been here. It feels more appropriate here in the throes of, like, a lot of battle stuff going on as opposed to just... It's an isolated thing, so...
You don't want to see him ripping... In the elevator, you don't see him actually... You know, that's why the elevator works, because, like, right, I think the door's shut, and then they open, and the arms are off, because that's kind of gross. I mean, it's a little bit too... Isn't that a touch too much to see him actually ripping somebody's arms off?
Well, I mean, it would have been... They could have done it the same way, where, you know, Han looks over, and he's holding the arm.
That's true.
No, you want to see... You want to see Chewbacca's fighting a guy, and all of a sudden you see a close-up that you don't even know what it is, and then you slowly see the sinews ripping apart, and then behind it is Han Solo being like...
Yeah, like... Check, please.
Yeah.
With all the ripped-off arms in all of the Star Wars movies, and it's just a tradition at this point, but you've never had that kind of thing like in Jurassic Park where you have the fake-out, where you have a disembodied arm, and you're like, oh my God, it's a disembodied arm, right? Where it's you're suddenly horrified to see that it's disembodied.
I guess the closest is in the original Star Wars. Doesn't it kind of pan across Walrus Man's arm?
Oh yeah. You're right.
You're not quite sure that it's cut off when you first see him. Maybe they do that, I guess. Although I don't know. I don't know if it just shows it in a... Anyway,
yeah.
People watching this can check it out for themselves.
Anyway, back to the front. Let's start at the beginning again.
Back to the front.
It's a period of civil war.
So L3 seems delighted that she has found her true purpose.
Yeah.
And it only makes it more bittersweet knowing what's going to happen to her in like 2 minutes, that she's going to be entombed forever in the Falcon's computer system.
Man.
Neither alive nor dead.
My emotional roller coaster with this. Again, I was like, oh, she's so like happy. The joy in her voice that she's like, I found my true purpose, Lando. And she's so excited. I'm like, I'm so glad we took this job. And then I was like, yeah. I was like, oh, wait a minute. If she didn't take this job, she might still be alive. And I was like,
And again, the way she reads those lines, it just takes it to another level. It's one of the most spectacular moments and exciting moments in all of the Star Wars movies, is just because of the way she reads those lines. It's a kind of take that you just don't hear that much in Star Wars, the way she does it. It's really, you know, you just feel it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So sad. Well, on a more positive note, you can kind of see in the background in this minute when they're showing back to the headquarters there, you can see Treadwell kind of chugging along in the background. And of course, one of the first droids we ever saw back in Star Wars. Do you think, is this the same Treadwell? Or let me rephrase that. How does this Treadwell get from here to the Lars homestead?
There you go.
Or to the Jawa Sandcrawler, depending on your...
I would assume it's just a different model. I mean, it's just a different robot, but...
Yeah, but it's not. It's the same one. So how does it get there?
It is. You're sure it's not just...
No, but I'm just saying here it is. Like, mm-hmm. More fun to try to speculate.
Within the room.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that as soon as the word got out that there's a robot uprising, the Jawas got into like a space crawler and came to Kessel they knew there was going to be, they're like, here, let's make a deal. We'll clean up. We'll take care of everything. Like you know, you don't worry about it. You can continue with your mining operation. We're just going to get rid of all this garbage for you, huh?
I like it.
So some of the droids that were maybe a little bit broken, they got repaired, and then they hightailed it back to the Jawa distribution center, where then they were sent off to different planets.
I like that.
They showed up with a sack of those. What are they called again? I'm forgetting now. The bolts.
The
bolts.
The what?
The restraining bolts.
There's just a big sack of restraining bolts. And just
they have like an automatic, like, shooting restraining bolts out at everybody.
Oh, they have a droid that does that. So it's like a cruel irony that the droid is the one applying the restraining bolts. I like that. That's the problem with the droid homeworld theory I had earlier in the week, is that you're going to get Jawas showing up at the droid homeworld. But that's what the droids could be. Like, no organic creatures at all are allowed in the droid homeworld.
Mm.
It is, and they have like an atmosphere that was like ammonia or something. So, you know, very few organic creatures could survive it.
Mm-hmm. But something that's good, yeah, like, yeah, like a sea of rubbing alcohol or something. It's like, so hard for organic creatures to survive, but it's great for robots.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's overall, I do hope we see a droid planet. Yeah, I'm surprised we have not seen a droid planet in Star Wars.
I don't know if I want one in Star Wars.
Fair enough.
That's the end of the show.
I do. I do. Well, I'd love regardless. To see them. Yeah, you know, yeah. Again, we've brought this up before. You know, I'd love to see a storyline that's just AI going rogue or whatever. You know, that would be fun. Yeah.
Well, regardless of whether or not you want to see it, I am surprised they haven't done it because, yeah. You know, it's right there.
Were there no droids represented in the Senate?
I no. don't think so.
They
but...
can't have the... I don't know. Why would... Yeah, it seems like would they even have... Would they legally be... Are they legally looked upon as citizens?
Unclear. Oh. We don't know.
It's like a kick to the gut. I'm like, oh, Star Wars droid, Senate, and the Senate cam droid. The floating cam droid is used in the Galactic Senate to record sessions of Congress. And I'm like,
Yeah. Again, you know, that's like, that would be like the first wave. You know, again, this isn't about woke. This is about first wave being thought of as not property, being right. thought of as autonomous, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, do we want to go there? I don't know.
I think it would be an interesting premise if they wanted to do it's almost kind of like the Clone Wars in a way where you could have a story where there was a droid revolt and there was a story about the, you know, the Republic having to quelch a droid uprising or something like that. I think that could be an interesting story.
Yeah, they've made a step towards it now, you know, and it's like, why not? Yeah. They opened the box up on this, so might as well. Like, it seems like that would be a great series, actually. That'd be a great series.
And
right?
There's...
Hire us to write that. We could write that. We can totally write that.
The when I started typing, I was like, Star Wars droid Senate, and I was like, Star Wars droid S-E-N, and it's like, Star Wars droid sentient, so I was like, no, stop, like, not right now.
You know what would be cool if they, it would be cool if there was a droid homeworld. Let's suppose this is like a future, let's suppose this is the Rian Johnson trilogy of the future.
Okay.
And they, the droids there, and the droid, you know, Darth Vader's a famous person, and the droids were like, no, well, Darth Vader was 100% a droid. Like, they would be arguing, like, claiming past cyborgs as droids, you know, in a historical context. You know what I mean?
I like that.
And then I also like, because remember when we were kids, we used to debate whether or not the stormtroopers were droids or whether they were living creatures. So. I guess people probably don't debate that too much anymore.
No, people yell at us when we talk about that. They're like, obviously they're not droids. Why would you think that? I'm like, because I was six. Like, what? Come on.
And they hadn't made that clear. But on a droid planet, like, it'd be interesting to see the wildlife that might be there and how the droids treat that wildlife. Of course, they wouldn't have to eat it or anything, but still.
Yeah.
Well,
Would
there be beasts of burden and stuff, or would there be just droids for every occasion? Like every droid had a job, and every droid was happy.
Or would
job.
the droids have organic slaves?
Exactly. Whoa. Would they exploit the wildlife? You know, how ethical?
Were they like a droid shouldn't have to work for another droid? Bring in an organic to work to do droid work. Oh, and then it's part of a symbiont circle. They were all part of the same machine, man. Machine man.
That the whole everybody, if you like talk of robot uprising, if you like music about robot uprising, be sure to check out the band Servotron. A lot of their
Rush. Surely Rush has done a thing about robot uprising.
More on brand is Servotron, who sing a lot of songs about. They even have a song about R5D4, Red Robot Refund. So
wow.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
But back to, speaking of Beasts of Burden for a second, yes. I didn't do this intentionally, but I was going to go back to the Kazdan notes.
Are you improvising?
He brings up the idea that I most regret not shooting. I mean, with a camera, I'm assuming. Involved a creature that Lord Miller conceived called a Wapota.
Wapota.
An elephant.
Like a turducken?
An elephant-like beast of burden, fitted with an enormous burrowing drill over its face for tunneling. And it breaks loose of its restraints during the Kessel Revolt and ends up chasing Han, Chewie, and Sagwa as they're escaping with the coaxium. It was an incredibly slow chase that had some great banter between Han and Chewie, but the sequence was cut in pre-production because of its cost. I fought long and hard to bring it back, but to no avail.
Wow.
I'd have to see like a animatic or something to understand what this means.
Hmm.
Like if you're being chased by an elephant, that seems like it would be a fast chase, not a slow chase.
Well, it's elephant-like. But I mean, maybe it's a slow chase. But if it's a slow chase with like a drilling thing that's going down a tunnel and you're pushing a sled full of stuff, you know what I mean? You can like push it forward and then like wait for a second to catch your breath or something, or I don't know.
That's why people get fooled by elephants. Most people who get killed on safari are hit by an elephant because everybody's like, oh, they're big, slow, lumbering things. And then they're the ones that kill you. They charge at you and you're dead. You're totally dead. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so, you know, they throw you off a little bit. They seem lumbering. But I mean, they said it was a slow chase, but I don't know. Yeah, I'd love to see the sketches or whatever, you know, they have on that.
Yeah, after The Last Jedi, I'm a little wary about any more slow chases. So I much rather prefer my elephant chases to be speedy. So,
right. I don't know. I guess there are, as I was going to say, this the movie is a little bit lacking in creatures, right? Solo? Other than, no, we had the table. We had the people around the card game.
Oh, you mean like aliens?
And we had Mother Proxima at the beginning and stuff like that. And all right, it's some. I don't know. I was like, could it use a, well,
This doggos at the beginning. I like, those are pretty good.
Yeah. I guess it's, I don't think it needs more creatures. I was going to say, yeah, I could use another creature, but no, especially, and then we got some monsters in the space, yeah. So.
Plus, if they have more creatures, there's more increased likelihood of more tentacle monsters, which.
Yeah, exactly.
Know. I love tentacle monsters. I'm opposite of you guys.
Mm.
I like tentacles.
What about tentacle droids?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I don't have any beef with tentacle monsters in as a concept. You know, it's just more the way sometimes that they're employed. Right. I like Dianoga. Yeah. On board with Dianoga.
Mm-hmm. I loved, what was the one that was in the Millennium Falcon in the recent ones? The one that
Claude?
That was, yeah, was it the whirring crazy thing that was when I'm just forgetting. I can't keep it all straight. The whirring crazy thing that would roll.
The Rathars.
Yeah.
No. Oh, no, the Rathars are the worst.
Yeah, the Rathars are in Force Awakens. That was the one that
nobody likes it. Yeah, I love them. I love them. So yeah.
Although Alex, I'm glad you went to Claude first, so that you're gearing up for next year.
Yeah, I thought you were. I thought I assumed you were talking about the next movie, but yeah, Claude.
Which I love. The next movie, by the way.
Oh yeah, because you said it was on the Falcon. That's what threw. Because the Rathars aren't on the Falcon. That's what threw me off. So anyway, doesn't matter.
They're cool. Right. They're on it at some point, but they're not.
But they're not inside. Yeah.
All right.
No, I think we're talking about something different. But whatever. Don't worry about it. I like all the tentacle monsters. Let's just put it that way. Right.
You've never met a tentacle monster you didn't like.
I have not. I have not. I like sea creature. I like that when they're based on sea creatures.
So like Phantom Menace, that's where you get your most of your big...
I did. That was the only scene in Phantom Menace I loved. Yeah, that was... Yeah.
There's always a gefilte fish.
Chewie to the rescue. I know Chewie's we talked about it.
I thought he was out of the movie for good. Now he comes back. I was so happy to see him again.
Well, I'm assuming that this is where Han Solo got the idea to pretend you have something better to do and then come in at the last minute to save the day. So like later we'll be like,
realize what a good trick that was.
Mix that flashback in where Han Solo is like, no, I can't be part of your rebellion. I got to go take care of some business.
Do you think in the Death Star battle, did Han and Chewie arrive and immediately just go in and start shooting and helping Luke, or did Han wait until it was like closer and he's like, not yet. Okay, now. Yahoo! You know what I mean? Did he time it so that it was more exciting? Did he hold back?
I don't know.
Anyway.
They couldn't have done it any other way.
Kind of floating. Like, it would be interesting, like, but partway through, you know, like, gold two, like, looking up, like, oh, what's that? Like, and there's the Millennium Falcon just kind of, like, flying around nearby.
Hovering, flying casual.
Right, yeah.
By the way, in a past episode, we talked about crying while Star Warsing.
That's right.
That was a subject we talked about. And I rewatched A New Hope, like, I don't know why, but I did. And I cried my eyes out at the end. And it's just like, how many times have I seen this? And it is, part of it is Han coming in at the end. It's lovely. It's lovely.
It's a
and they blow
moment.
The thing up. It's exciting. Yeah,
it
and
is.
I cried. Somehow
I'm happy that cross the short fuse in my brain that allows me to most of the time to forget that happens until it happens.
I don't know. It's just satisfying. It's a good movie.
It is. Nobody here is going to argue against that.
No, that's, you're preaching to the choir. Preaching to the space choir. One of the things.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to kind of speculate about future things. So okay. If you have something specific to the minute,
let me. Right. So, speaking of the choir, it's unlike me, but I started the week like this, and I'm going to end the week like this, talking about the music. I said it.
I wrote that down. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at the beginning, the music got a little like boop, bloop, boop, boop, and here,
jaunty.
It's doing it again, and it's like this jaunty. I wrote it's kind of Spielberg-y in the music. It's got this like very like, you know, like isn't this cute that we're doing this adventure kind of music, as opposed to like a more dire, like we don't feel that anything is necessarily dire here, even though there's a whole lot going on that there's stuff that could be danger, you know what I mean, but it's still like got this music of like bum, ba, da, bum, bum, almost like a nautical kind of Spielberg to it, and it's really interesting.
I didn't like it. You know, I wrote that down that for some reason I didn't notice it during the beginning, our first minute, the uprising, the part of that, I didn't notice the music there actually, but I noticed it here. It just jarred me because I didn't think it fit. I thought it was really corny, just really corny. It just didn't work.
It's odd, definitely. I can't tell. I mean, if I'm approaching it as somebody who knows, you know, oh, I know that everything's going to work out okay, and this is a fun part of the movie, and I like it. But if I'm approaching this as like, oh, what's going to happen? Then I'm like, well, it's obviously like doesn't seem like it's going to be. There's not really risk or danger because the music is telling me everything's fun right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think the movie definitely assumes you've seen Star Wars before. Hmm. Like, because all the stuff about like Han looking at his gun and the going around the Millennium Falcon, like all that stuff only works if you're viewing it in the context of this is an entry in the Star Wars saga, I think.
Hmm.
But, you know,
yeah,
the same thing, like we said, with Chewbacca just kind of leaving and then coming back. And like, we know he's going to come back at some point. So,
although it would be interesting if he just left and then like they met back up with him again in Solo 2, which they planned to do or something like that. You know,
well, that's what I was going to. My this thing was going to be about Solo 2 and specifically relating to Chewbacca. We learn earlier at the campfire scene that Chewbacca's whole thing is he's trying to find his tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's peculiar to me that we now go to a bunch of enslaved Wookiees and his family is not like it's weird that you'd mention this as a story beat earlier on and not have it pay off. You know what I mean? Not be like, you know, it's like mentioning, do you think they were thinking, oh, this will be a future story? It seems weird that, like, that Chewie's talking about wanting to find his family, and here he is, they free a bunch of Wookiees, and they're not his family. You know what
but
I mean?
But he said family or tribe, and they said they weren't sure what he said. He actually specifically says, I'm not sure if he said family or tribe. And they were like, that's the same thing. So the implication
but Chewie doesn't
is,
seem like he leaves. I don't think Chewie's leaving being like, yes, I did it. I freed my tribe, my family. Like, I don't think he leaves feeling, you know what I mean? Like, that is left unresolved in the story, I feel like.
And granted, this has become a theme with me lately, but I'm relieved that's not resolved in that sense. Like, I don't need to, like, oh, set it up in the beginning and then resolve it at the end. I don't need everything to be like that in the, you know, that Chewie talking about, you know, somebody talking wistfully about, you know, like what they want, you know, out of life doesn't have to necessarily always pay off at the end when you're doing, you know.
I mean, they're free. They're free. So that is the payoff. Isn't that isn't that enough that they're...
I mean, it certainly, you know, it flavors this, that him talking about finding his people and then kind of freeing a group of his people. And as Alex said, if when Sagwa shows up later, it's still like we find out kind of apparently that they've from here, they've established like a greater kind of like a Wookiee, a galactic Wookiee network of sorts where they're all more in touch with each other and following where they're. Yeah. And so. Yes, in a sense, it does flavor that, but I'm glad it's not as directly of like, and he finds his actual family here in the cave, you know what I mean? That kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad it's not like that. I'm always glad when the, and again, this is a, you know, maybe this is a purely the my reaction to having watched, you know, like 40 something years of movies and just being sick of the hero's journey and all that, all the save the cat stuff. But I just like anytime it's not just like, and then here's we're gonna do this and we did this, like I'm always like, oh good. Like I'm relieved when it's not kind of gonna do what it should do in a sense.
Yeah, I think they did enough. You know, I think it was cathartic enough. You know, it was cathartic enough. You know, like he needed to go back to his tribe and you know, that, you know, like, I don't know, it touched on it in a way that I think was appropriate and kind of.
I'm not saying this as a criticism, by the way. I'm not saying like, oh, that was so stupid. They should have totally should have had that. I just thought it was interesting that it was, you generally don't see like some of a character's motivation being mentioned and then it kind of not, or it, you know.
That's what
like Luke Skywalker wants to find a life of adventure and then he finds a life of adventure. So it's, I don't know. I think it's kind of, you know, again, not a bad thing. If anything, it's more realistic because we all have ideas about how we think our life is going to go, and then life sometimes doesn't go that way. You don't say, "Oh, that whole scene was so weird," where he was talking about getting that job, and then he never got the job. Like it didn't pay off or anything. You know, that's the way life is.
Right.
But it's unusual in movies, which generally try to economize and pick stuff that's going to like thematically all kind of tie together. And like you said, it is, he does free some Wookiees, so it does continue the theme. But I wonder if they, if at any point that was going to be part of the story, or if they were like, oh, let's hold that off for a second film or whatever.
Everybody in this movie ends up ultimately frustrated. I mean, the whole Han Kira trajectory didn't work out the way he wanted that to work. You know, everything about that was from the beginning was frustrating and frustrated. Yeah. And then, you know, ultimately even, Space
I would say Kira doesn't wind up frustrated, and Fist Ness maybe doesn't wind up. Like, she's still got a thing ahead of her.
Kira's kind of frustrated, but in a different way.
She winds up with the second in command of the whole Crimson Dawn.
I know, but not what...
I mean, that's a complicated thing, because does she, you know, she kind of got, I you know, well, I sort of wanted to talk a little bit about that too, like, you know, Kira in more broad terms, but that she, you know, she kind of got rooked into, I mean, you kind of go into survival mode, you know, when you come from that kind of childhood, and then you get, clearly, she, you know, she told him, like, you knew, she set it up that she was going to be forced into this life of, you know.
Right, yeah.
You get the feeling that this was all not her, this is not her ideal, but she's doing it because that's where she is and that's how she's surviving now. That's it. And, you know, that's, I mean, and I don't know the whole, like, stuff that's non-movie canon, but I know, like, yeah, she ends up, I mean, she ends up being a big mobster, right? Isn't that right?
Yeah.
And
so it seems kind of like it's the ending she wanted.
No, I mean, we'll get there when we get there, but I think it, you know, at least for a bit, it seems like there's a glimmer of, yes, she can go have the life with Han. And then it's like, well, no, actually, I'm trapped into this whole thing. So now I've just got to take the next step up into being.
Yeah,
I don't see it that way.
I think she would have preferred to have escaped with Han and then them going off on their adventures. But she just got completely trapped in this world where you just do what you have to do to survive. I don't know. But, you know, it's debatable, of course.
Right. We'll look for clues when we get there.
But I mean, by the time of Empire Strikes Back, seems like if she really wanted to get out of the life, she could get out of the life. In a world of cyborgs and...
In a world.
Yeah, I don't know the far future story. Yeah, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, but we'll get to the end. I think that's the moment where Kira is showing who she truly is. Now she is... Crimson Dawn is who she is now, and it's not a matter of, I want to get out of here. She's like, I'm Michael Corleone now, and I'm choosing to be part of this evil organization.
You think Michael is content, is happy at the end of Godfather?
Yeah, I think it is similar. It's a very good parallel, because I don't know. Yeah, is he? Is he?
I think he is. We talked about it actually on the show, because someone did an example of bittersweet versus sweet bitter versus... Like, Michael Corleone gets what he wants, but he doesn't get what he needs. Mm. And if you get what you want and not what you need, you're not going to be happy. Right. So you know what I mean? So that was and the same thing with Kira. Here, she is getting what she wants. Is it what she needs? We don't know, because we don't really see much of her life outside of this thing. But I think she is, in the end, is making a conscious choice of saying, this is who I am now. Like, you know, I love being powerful. And if the world is cruddy and there's going to be people who are enslaved, I want to be the people at the top of the pyramid, not the people at the bottom of the pyramid. But we'll see what happens.
Okay. We will.
That's all I have for minute number 80.
Same.
Sorry if I got a little soapboxy there.
No, that's good.
You know, from Battlestar Galactica, soapboxy.
That was all I had too. Susan, did you have anything else either for this minute or any other things from Solo in general? Things that we already talked about that you wanted to revisit? Things coming up that you wanted us to look out for?
I'll just, you know, like, touch on sort of a little bit of what we were just saying. But, you know, I feel like there's an essay from this movie about the female characters. You know, it's a very unique movie as far as the female characters that are kind of the biggest characters. Like, you know, again, Kira... And femininity, I don't know, like, I'm in my headspace is like sometimes feminism, but, you know, femininity, like Kira using her femininity as a shield, as a, you know, she's kind of using it in a manipulative way. I think she is forced to do that. You know, to me, that's how I see it, was that she was kind of forced into this life and she has to. I mean, she, you know, you get the impression, she, you know, she probably didn't choose to want to be, what's his name, Dryden Voss's girl. And, you know, you kind of have to. You have to sleep with these people to, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, you know, I feel bad for her in that Bond girl kind of way, you know, where you're just like, was it her choice? I don't know. But now she's surviving. So she's clearly duplicitous from the beginning, from the moment we meet her at that party. But then you have Enfin Nest, you know, is like, interestingly, in this male disguise, she has that incredible, scary male voice and that really scary, you know, outfit that she's wearing to hide this really, like, you know, big-eyed, you know, kind of gentle, you know, human being underneath with a soft voice, you know. And I thought that was a really interesting depiction of, like, a female, you know, putting on this male front to survive, which is the opposite of Kira, you know. It's kind of two ends of the spectrum of surviving. And then L3 is just who she is. There's no disguise. She's got childbearing hips, even though she's a robot. You know, she's just busty. She's all woman. She's all woman, but she is not ashamed of it, and she's not hiding it. And she is just being who she is, even if she annoys everybody around her, you know, all that stuff. And you know, I just thought it was really, like, I don't know what the overarching theme is here, that thesis I'm trying to project, but I just think there's an essay in this of, like, looking at the main female characters in this movie and how they kind of represent womanhood. I just think that there's something there. But anyway, so I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah. You get a Val, too.
There is Val, yeah. Val. She's a little bit more minor, but yeah, she's also an interesting character to look at. I don't know, maybe I should... Who should I write this for? I'll write it for somebody. I don't know. I don't know. Somebody pay me to write that.
That's a whole nother matter.
Right. Wait, you pay?
I know. That's you the thing. Like, yeah, nobody's, what am I kidding? Nobody's going to, I just got to write it.
I was trying to think if there are any other female characters that we haven't met yet, but I think we're pretty
in
much
this
done
movie?
With, yeah.
Hmm.
I mean, we've met Enfys Nest, but we haven't really met Enfys Nest, but.
Right.
But yeah,
she's so great. I love her so much. That's a great character.
Yeah. Well, speaking of great characters, thanks for being one on our show all week.
Thank you so much for asking me. I'm always thrilled.
Yeah, always happy to talk to you. And everybody should check out the Comedy Film Funnel. And
it's on YouTube and any podcatcher.
Right.
And the other person on that is Mr. Joe Dater, who's a Star Wars Minute fan favorite, I think.
I think you might
be coming upon him like pretty soon.
You might be seeing
him right here in this little box that you're watching us in. Yeah,
you know, write down our number and give it to him and see what he says. You know, maybe we can make something work. We'll see.
When you say write down our number, do you mean our
94.
Phone number or how much we're paying him?
94
or 94. Yeah.
We'll see what everybody says. Hey, if you don't think you can make it through the weekend without us, guess what? You can go over to StarWarsMinute.com/Patreon and listen to some episodes on Saturday and Sunday. And
it's true.
We can be in your ears every day if that's what you so desire. Help support the show and get some bonus content. And then we'll be back on Monday with a brand new episode of
Star Wars Minute.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.